This is Expat State of Mind with Tip and Tom.
Hey, this is Tom.
Hey, this is Tip.
And this is Expat State of Mind. And today we're speaking with David McNeil, an expat himself, also someone who works in the industry of health expats. So welcome to the show, David. How are you doing?
Great. Thank you so much for having me today.
Great to have someone on. I also listened to a few of your podcasts earlier. And I think very similar to what we do here and some interesting conversations with people that have moved all over the world. So definitely where people shoot over to that as well. If you're enjoying what we're doing here, you probably enjoy that. Tip, you're the one that sort of reached out to David. Do you want to mention anything at the beginning?
Well, David actually reached out to us. He sent us a few emails last year, which sounds weird to say because, like, I feel like 2020 was a very long year. But he did send us some emails because he had listened to an episode or two of our podcast. And I checked out his website and kind of saw that what he was doing is very similar to what we're doing. So I figured it'd be a good idea to have him on. So David, why don't you tell us a bit about how you got to where you are? So I know you're in Portugal now, but right. I have read that you have lived in quite a few countries and you've visited over 60 countries. Is that right?
Yeah, I think I'm at 59 right now. So I just need one more to turn over to 60. But yeah, it's been a good ride so far. So I guess to give you a sense of my, how I got to where I am today. So I'm originally from the US, born and raised there, started getting an interest in Japan, actually, when I was about 12 years old. So I was interested in the culture and the games and the anime and all that cool stuff, and started studying Japanese, and that was my original passion. And so I kept that passion through high school and university. I had two trips to Japan as a tourist. And after the second trip, and both those trips were about 1 month, so a pretty good, you know, amount of time as far as tourism is concerned. And after the second trip, I just thought, I love this place. I want to come back. But if I come back, I want to be living here, not just as a tourist. So that was my big goal going into university and coming out of university. Unfortunately, I couldn't find that job in Japan, even though I tried. So I got my start in the United States. I started working in finance at first, in investment banking, just coming out of basically business, you know, an undergrad business finance degree. And I sort of put those international dreams to the side for a while. But after 2 years, I moved offices to the San Francisco office. And there I was able to find a new role as a product manager. So that was sort of the next stage of my career. And there I had the opportunity to go to Beijing, China for 3 months in a work deployment. So we got to work with the local team there, do some traveling, just really enjoy the city, enjoy the country. And I came back from that so re-energized to get abroad. And unfortunately, I got caught in a round of layoffs only about a month after I got back. This was back in 2014. Mm-hmm. But I thought, you know, this is not going to be the last opportunity for me to go abroad. I'm going to find a way to make it happen, you know. And I traveled through Europe. And while I was doing that, I was also taking interviews in China and Japan. And I managed to finally find that job in Japan. So I went to Tokyo for 2 years, starting in 2014. So in 2016, then we can talk through all the details, but to try to keep it short, I decided to then move to a place that I really loved during my travels across Europe. And that was Berlin, Germany. So I moved there in 2016 and I spent 3 years there. And then got married while I was there. And my wife and I were kind of thinking about where is next for us. And we visited Portugal, both Lisbon and Porto, back in 2018. Absolutely loved it. And long story short, found a way to get here about just over 1 year ago, so November of 2019. So yes, now I'm here in Porto. And indeed, as you mentioned, working on helping more people to find opportunities abroad, to be able to move abroad for all different types of reasons to all different countries. And I do that through Expat Empire at expatempire.com. So happy to talk through my background, my experience, and what I do now for a living. So feel free to ask any questions, I guess.
Well, it's an interesting story. I am wondering though, where in the States are you from?
It's a great question to ask, and it's a very hard one to answer, probably for a lot of people like us, but I actually moved around quite a bit growing up, both from my dad's job and my mom's job at different points. And so I was born in California, and I guess I say that I'm sort of from there when people ask the question, because I was born there and I spent high school in the Los Angeles area, and then I worked in San Francisco, as I mentioned, before I left the US in 2014.
Right. I think people who do tend to move around a bit in the States are more likely to then want to go overseas, or they're more likely to go overseas in general, whether it's travel or to live, just because you kind of get in that like mindset of, you know, going mm-hmm. to explore and seeing new places. And it's interesting that you said it was the age of 12 where you had this feeling like you want to go to Japan, and you eventually, you know, had the feeling that you wanted to move there, because that was around the time where I knew that I wanted to come to Australia. It was when I was 12 years old. And, right. But at the time I didn't really know how I was going to make it happen. And I'm assuming, you know, it's similar for you, you know, your 12 year old brain is like, I want to go here, but, you know, not thinking at all of the logistics.
Right.
So it's good to see that similarity.
Definitely. I would just say that I think having that experience of moving around a lot. So, you know, I guess I'm from California, but I lived in Alabama, where my dad's family's from. My sister was born in Illinois. I went to school, university at Austin, Texas. Mm-hmm. So, you know, moving around quite a bit, it just gives you that experience of seeing so much of even your own country. And I mean, of course, the United States is a huge country, yes. but being able to see all the different sort of, let's say, cultures and people, and, you know, interacting in really dynamic and international environments like Los Angeles, like Austin, Texas, and so on. So right. I think through all of that, it just gives you that feeling that there's a lot more out there. I want to explore it, and I can be successful in all of these different places. I can build new friend groups. I can build new networks, you know, put into a new school, a new environment, I'm able to thrive. So gives you that confidence to take the next step internationally in the future.
Yeah. And it makes you more adaptable. So I'm imagining when you first moved to, let's say, Beijing, the transition wasn't too harsh, or maybe it was because it's a different language, completely mm-hmm. different culture. So actually, what was it like when you first went to Beijing for your work assignment?
Yeah, it was an incredible experience. And I guess one thing that I skipped over in the intro was that I did do a semester abroad in university at the National University of Singapore. So, So I'd already actually been to Asia, of course, and I had those travels to Japan, like I mentioned, but I traveled around quite a bit. But important to note is that at the end of my semester in Singapore, I thought, you know, I really want to see China. Just has always been in the back of my mind, like this, you know, foreign land. And so I took a trip there for over 2 weeks, I think 2.5 weeks. And I saw a lot of different cities, and it was a difficult trip, honestly, because I went from this great group of people in Singapore. I mean, all these other foreign exchange students, mm-hmm. we were traveling around on every other weekend. We were having, you know, parties together and all this. And then I went by myself to China, and I don't think I fully realized how difficult, at least at that point, which, let me think, it was 2009. It was still very hard outside of the large cities like Beijing and Shanghai to be able to communicate effectively in English. So right. with my practically non-existent Chinese, just a few words, which I couldn't get the tones right anyway, so they couldn't really understand. I had that experience. And so when I had the opportunity to go back, I was even considering, you know, do I want to go back? I mean, I thought it was a really cool place, but I was just a little hesitant. And I'd already been there. And one other opportunity with work was potentially to go to Vancouver instead, which I've never been to Canada, still haven't, unfortunately. And so I thought, okay, maybe I could try that. And they needed more people in Beijing, so pretty much the decision was made for me. And I was totally, you know, happy with it, fine with it. And going over there, going with a team of five, and having a lot of people that were previously living in San Francisco that had moved over there, and just having that instant network, having the coworkers, obviously having a lot more money than when I traveled as a student. It was an incredible experience, and really changed the way that I, you know, thought about the country. And obviously some things have changed there in the few years since I had been as well, but I immediately started studying Chinese. I thought maybe I'd always been interested in Japan, but maybe China is the future. You know, that's what everyone was kind of saying. And here was my opportunity. So I wasn't even going to be picky about, okay, it had always been Japan. It was like, this is my chance to go abroad. So
right.
I loved it. And when I was asked during the program, did I want to come back, or how I was enjoying it? Did I want to like stay for longer? I said, yes, please send me back for longer this time, like ideally at least a year, because I thought this is my chance. So when I was laid off, it was a huge, huge bummer, to put it lightly. Yeah. I saw that, you know, image of being over a year abroad in China just sort of vanish in front of me. But, you know, it was sort of the thing that lit the drive back in me to try to find a way to go abroad.
And you mentioned that you studied Chinese, and you mentioned earlier that you studied Japanese as well. Mm-hmm. Wherever you've been, so you've been in every country you've been to, has been a different language. So how have you managed that? And have you learned the language of, you know, everywhere you've been? So are you currently learning, or have you learned Portuguese? How's that working out?
It's a good question. I think over the time, my feelings on it have changed a bit. So, So I studied Japanese since I was 12, really, really intensely, and all the way through university. And it was a huge passion of mine. So I spent so much energy and time on that language. And then before I got to Japan, I was in China, and I thought, okay, this is the future. And I could also tell there that it was not that easy to get around just speaking English. I'm not saying it wasn't possible, but I felt that drive to be able to communicate. And I think I just have also maybe more of an interest in Asian languages perhaps, but I just thought, okay, this is the future. This is my opportunity. So I'm going to dive in and just start learning online and practicing. And there's a little bit that you can bring from Japanese, obviously not all that much, but more of a familiarity with learning the written characters and things like that. So I just jumped into that head first, and ultimately didn't keep it up after I found out that I wasn't headed back there.
That's fair enough.
But yeah, but it is a hard language. But now as I've, so let's see, I went to Japan, finally, I got to use all of that Japanese that I'd been studying for so long. In fact, while I was in Japan, I took the top level proficiency exam. So I totally, from my point of view, like completed that entire cycle.
Japanese.
Yeah, I sort of reached the summit of the Japanese language mountain, at least from my perspective, and as far as formal studies were concerned. And then I only lived there for 2 years. And I mean, I'm happy to talk about what happened there, but just as far as ultimately, in short, not finding the next opportunity for me in Japan past the job that got me there. So then I moved to Germany, as I mentioned, and when I did that, I thought, oh, it'd be great to learn some German. But also a big reason that I decided on Berlin, outside of just my interest and love for the city, was the fact that there were a lot of English-speaking roles there. That was a big part of, you know, okay, I can be in Europe and I can speak English. And so as a result, I never really saw it as a long-term move. I feel a bit differently now about Portugal, so we'll see how it evolves over the next years. But my goal in Berlin was to be there for longer than I was in Japan. That was kind of my goal, was like, I spent all this time trying to get to Japan. I only was there for 2 years, and it was an amazing 2 years, but it was only 2 years. So if I can stay for 2 years in one day, then I've kind of achieved my goal as far as Berlin and Germany were concerned. So I'd learned a little bit, but not very much. And it was very easy to get around Berlin for the most part in your daily life, using English. There's lots of foreigners there. But now in Portugal, I've taken it a bit more seriously because I do have more long-term intentions here, but I also need to, you know, stop taking my break on studying Portuguese and get back into it. But it's a different mentality toward it, but it's also recognizing that it's another country where if you try to speak some broken Portuguese, the person you're talking to will just change into nearly perfect English. And, you know, that makes it a little bit harder to get motivated around it.
I feel like that's also the case here as well. When someone's trying to learn English, if you are around people who like speak the language that you speak, it's harder to try to practice your English because, you know, when people hear you trying and they're like, oh, do you speak
you know, Spanish, for example, and then mm-hmm. if they're comfortable speaking Spanish and they know you are, then you just switch to Spanish, and then the struggle to learn English could be a bit harder. But it's funny, like, I wanted to live in Berlin as well, and mm-hmm. I remember when I went to visit, like, we did so much, like, we did, like, this intensive Germany course so we could be prepared for this, because it was for a conference, and then we get there, and, like, every time I tried to speak German, the person was like, oh, you're American, and then swapped to English, and, right. and I'm just like, oh, you know, well, I am trying, and, you know, I don't want people to think, like, I assume that, you know, everyone should be speaking English, but at times people thought to themselves, well, it's an opportunity for me to practice my English if I exactly. speak to you in English versus, you know, helping you with your German, which was fun.
Yeah, I think that's a great example. I mean, it's a lot of the cases where you're their opportunity to practice English. But I also wanted to point out that I think it's very different to learn a language as a working adult compared to a young, you know, child or student, not only in terms of maybe how quickly you can pick it up, you know, the older that you get, the harder that it is, but also just the amount of time and energy that you have to put into learning a language outside Definitely. Of your work responsibilities and building, you know, your relationships with your, you know, spouse or significant other or, you know, friends around the area. So I think it's very different. And it's funny because the very first point when I moved to Japan, you know, after trying for so long, I was so surprised to see a lot of foreigners there that didn't speak Japanese. I was like, man, I worked so hard to get here, and I studied the language so hard and the culture, tried to, you know, integrate myself into everything. And I was just seeing that there were a lot of people in Japan that didn't have that same route, and I couldn't really understand it. It was a bit baffling, but now that I've done Germany and Portugal, I can understand it a bit better, let's say. I mean, yeah. if your job takes you there, or, you know, one way or another, you're able to get there, and it's just not as required in your day-to-day life, and people are more able to, you know, happy to speak your language, then I get it, because it is a large investment of time and energy to try to get good at something. You know, you don't necessarily have 20 years like I did with Japanese to prepare and get better before you move there. So I have more of a soft spot for it because I recognize now I'm doing the same thing in other countries.
Right. Well, switching gears a little bit, you mentioned when you went to China, you were with other colleagues because, you know, your work sent you there on assignment. But when you moved to Japan and Germany and then Portugal, what were your experiences meeting new people, like networking, whether it was through work or, you know, socially? Mm-hmm. And do you feel like you ended up kind of gravitating toward other expats or locals?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think it's important to note that each of those moves that I've made have been with a brand new job. So outside of the one that was to China for that deployment from San Francisco, every job that took me to Japan, to Germany, and to Portugal were all brand new jobs. So I didn't have the built-in network of people that perhaps I already knew from within the organization. That mm-hmm. said, I did go, you know, to work there. And so, of course, I had coworkers as well. But each country was a bit of a different situation. So to try to make it long story short, I would say in Japan, it was difficult to make friends there, not just with Japanese people, even though I spoke the language and I did my best to integrate. It was difficult to kind of break into some of those social circles. So I still went to a lot of meetup events. I tried to meet a lot of people, went to, like, I found some concert going, you know, friends, Japanese friends. And that was really great, actually, because I was able, like, some of those guys had their own bands. And so I was able to go, you know, and enjoy that and meet the rest of the band members and the other bands as well. And so that was a really cool experience. But outside of some of those experiences, I would say, like, I gravitated probably more toward the expats in Japan. It was just kind of easier, let's say. It was still right. difficult, though.
Why do you think that was, especially for expats, like people who may be from the same place that you are or other countries? Why was it hard for you to break into those friend groups?
Yeah, hard to put an exact finger on it. And of course, everyone's situation is different. But I would say in a vast metropolis like Tokyo, in a way, it's not as original as it might be in a small town to find like another foreigner. So in a way, right. it still gives you some sort of entrance into that conversation, but it's not as easy as it would be if there's three of the foreigners in, you know, some small town where it's like, oh, hey, we need to hang out, you know? So I think that was part of it. I think also, I mean, as far as my coworkers were concerned, I believe when I joined, the youngest person on the team. Mm-hmm. And as a result, a lot of the others had significant others or families and, you know, were more focused on family life, which I totally understand, but that was not, you know, where I was at the time. Mm-hmm. And so that made it more difficult to connect with coworkers outside of work. And I think in terms of making friends otherwise, a lot of people moved to Japan to teach English, for example, which is, you know, totally very great. True. So makes sense. And I recommend people that are interested to do that. But what was difficult was I was living downtown with, you know, with sort of a more, you know, product management oriented job. And I think just being able to find the people that were coming in from maybe outside, far outside the city on the weekends to have enough money to go and, you know, have a good night out on the town on a Friday or Saturday, as well as potentially waiting until the morning train after the train stop around midnight. You know, there were these people, and of course I found them, but it was just more difficult, I think, to make those long-term deep connections because maybe I'd only see them once per month if right. they were coming in the weekend or something like that. And a lot of the jobs also, people are doing things like recruiting English-speaking talent to Japanese and foreign companies in Japan. And a lot of their meetings are late at night after people get out of work, and, you know, the typical Japanese workday can be long. And so it was hard to connect with those people as well. And so I eventually did make some good friends there, but I would actually say for my friend group that I had much more success building that and maintaining and deepening those relationships in Berlin, for example, where it's just a city with, of course, a lot of German people as well. So I tried to make some German friends, but more than that, I think it was just even the companies I was working at, the first one that I joined, I made this great group of initial friends. And I think that company with in that office, maybe 120 or I don't know, 150 upwards of that number of people, they had, I think, less than 20 Germans, maybe even less than 15 or 10. I don't remember, wow. but very few. And so people were coming in from all different countries and they were generally around the same age range. So it was just an opportunity to really connect with those people, go out for drinks after work. And that's just an example of how I started those relationships when I went to right. Germany compared to Japan.
Cool. And now that you are married and you moved to Portugal.
Well, before you get into that, get into that, I was going to ask you, did you meet your wife in Berlin? You mentioned you moved to Portugal together. So did you meet in Berlin?
Right. Yeah, so we did meet in Berlin, but the funny part is that she's Japanese. So
you know what? I had a feeling that your wife was going to be from Japan just because of like your love for Japan. I was like, I wonder if
right.
his wife's Japanese, but
yeah, yeah. I mean, it wasn't that I set out on that goal, like that was the one criteria. By all means, that's not the case, but I think what I found was really important. You know, even just to take a step back, when I was in Japan and when I left, I, you know, broke up with my girlfriend at the time when I moved to Germany. And so there I began to realize how important it was that I wanted to be with somebody that was open to being in international environments outside of their home country.
Right.
And I'm not saying my girlfriend in Japan at the time was not open to that idea. She'd actually, I think, done some courses in Australia. I can't remember the details. But, you know, she had been abroad before. And so she had some of that mindset, you know, very good mastery of the English language. But on the other hand, I think when sort of it came down to it, she wasn't really, you know, ready to move away from family and everything that she had in Japan. So because I have such a drive to be abroad and to experience new things, new countries and cultures, I think it's really important to be with somebody that has that same mentality. So to find indeed a Japanese person that had like I had that drive about Japan, and my wife had that drive about Germany. So being able to find that and connect on that level then made it so much easier for us to talk about not just, hey, are we moving to the US or Japan, to our home countries, but rather let's move into get another country that's foreign to both of us.
Right. And something that we've talked about before on the podcast is that it can, that can be, you know, a hurdle when it comes to dating, because, you know, what if you meet someone and, you know, they're from another country, but in their mind, when it's time to talk marriage and settling down and children, raising a family, they actually want to go back to their home country, versus, you know, staying in the country that you've met in, or going somewhere else, like you've done, and, you know, going to a totally different country that neither of you are from. And so that's one of the things that we've heard time and time again, is that, you know, that's something that you have to think about in the back of your mind. It's like, you know, are we on the same page, you know, as to whether or not this is where we're going to settle, or do we want to move elsewhere? Do we have plans to continue our overseas experience in other countries?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we definitely talked about that early on, and we even tried traveling together, you know, to a nearby city, only, you know, 6 weeks or 8 weeks into the relationship, because that is another, like, very, you can make it a very early stage hurdle as well, as like, do you travel well together? So, you know, from that, because it's, it, I mean, at the end of the day, you have to go for what the deal breakers and the versus the nice to haves. And, you know, for me, being abroad, being able to travel, being comfortable together in that environment, being able to move to a new country together, these are vital for me to have. So, I mean, for both of us. So we tested that early, and then we soon started thinking, okay, you know, where's maybe next for us? And at the right timing, with the right opportunity, we did make it here to Portugal, and we're both, you know, mutually happy here in our land that's foreign to both of us. So I think it's worked out really well.
That's good. That's really good. And it's funny that you mentioned that you guys went to travel to like a another place. Well, you said 6 weeks into your relationship, because I think
Tom and I
did the exact same thing. I don't know, was it 6 weeks? Like, we planned this trip. Like,
yeah, we planned it way
like out, a week and a half, 2 weeks after we'd met, we were like, okay, we're gonna go on a trip together. And it wasn't like that. It was like Tom dropping hints and me like taking forever to figure out that he was insinuating that we should take a trip together. And then I think the trip was like maybe like a month or two later.
Yeah, it was about a month later, but I think initially it was just going to be like a local weekend away, which was estimated.
Yeah, yeah, the very first thing was like, you know, going somewhere. But then it turned into like going to another country. And then, so like you said, it is good to kind of get that traveling experience together out of the way, because you could learn a lot when you travel with someone.
I think it's an amazing learning opportunity, like you mentioned. And indeed, if it's on your must-have list, then it's better to figure it out sooner rather than later.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I'll end on that trip that if Tiffany doesn't mind us not being there, she's not going.
Wait, what? Sorry?
I was saying, I'll end on that trip that if you don't want to go snorkeling, it's not happening, no matter how much.
Oh my God, even though Tom got to spend so much time snorkeling, he sunburnt his entire back. So that was the real reason. I was like, you know, I'm worried about you and your sunburn. Yeah. But anyway, what I was going to ask before is, because you'd moved to Portugal with a partner, did you find that it was a bit different meeting other people? Because now it's like kind of the two of you, versus maybe when you were in Berlin and in Tokyo, you said you were using Meetup and stuff. And whereas, like, you know, as a single person, you go to these events and, you know, you meet people and whatever. Whereas like now what I found is that people who are kind of in a couple, it's almost like you kind of meet people, or you want to meet people as a couple, instead of like one person making all these friends and the other person not making friends, and you end up, you know, someone's having like a good time, the other person's feeling a bit lonely.
I think this is a great point. Definitely has changed the way that we've approached meeting people. I mean, I will say from the get-go that I'm much more of the extrovert and my wife is much more of an introvert. And so she's, you know, generally kind of happy with a few key relationships. And so I think for me, it's been more about, I'd like to build a bit more of a network professionally and personally as well. So it's been a bit different. I still have used Meetup here, but you know, for example, I think one key difference is that's also why I decided to start the Expat Empire Porto Meetup. So I've done that a few times. It's obviously been hard in the last months, but hope to continue it and grow it in the next across this year. And what I tried to do there was not to just have yet another, let's say, like dating meetup. I mean, I've been to plenty of those, right? I guess we all have over the years. And so I, at least in terms of course, if people want to, you know, date or flirt or any of that stuff, I mean, they can do so. But I just made it clear from the get-go that it wasn't for that. It was more about just bringing people together, whether they're interested in being abroad and, you know, their local Portuguese, or they've lived in a ton of countries, or this is their first time abroad, or they're just traveling here, or they're thinking about moving to Portugal and doing a trip to sightsee. So just creating that environment, I think, was a great step, and it also allowed me to meet a lot of people. And some of the folks that I met through these meetups that I've organized are, you know, still friends of mine, and I meet up with them outside of those events. So you still have to, I think, reach out and maybe see different ways that you can do it. I did also move here with, you know, working for a company. Mm-hmm. So through that, I was able to also tap into their networks and, you know, grab a beer with them after work or meet their friends or different things like that. So yeah, it has changed a bit. And definitely when I see another couple and get along well with them, then I think let's, you know, get us all together for like an evening out with my wife and their significant other. And
we're not on Zoom at the
moment. Yeah, exactly. Do it more remotely. But I'm trying to think, like, I think it's still, it's important, but maybe some of the routes or some of the groups are a bit different as well. And to meet people. Sorry, I realize I'm rambling a bit here, but
no, that's all right.
I'm just thinking through all the ways that we've tried to get her at the beginning. Like, it was like, yeah, when I arrived in Berlin, I got off the plane, I went to the Airbnb where I was going to stay for the first 4 weeks, checked in, I left there, grabbed some food, went straight to a meetup event. Then they're like, hey, we're going to go to a club. I'm like, great, let's go to the club. And then about 30 minutes into that, I'm like, guys, I got to go back and sleep. So that was the level of intensity that I was originally doing to try to meet people. And of course, in this current situation, in a brand new country, it's different. But I also think you have to find the people that you connect with really well. And for me, that's maybe people that listen to similar music, or just people that go to some of the spots that you like, whether it's a certain bar or coffee shop. You know, here I'm also near the beach, so there's an opportunity to go there, but also to try out, I've been trying out some surfing. I'm not any good, but I'm trying it out. So that kind of opens up different avenues for meeting people. But I think it's getting outside of just the club, dating oriented kind of meetup events and trying to do some right. different things. So yeah.
You may just answer this question, but when you move as a sort of serial relocator, when you move somewhere, is there something that you sort of, one thing you sort out straight away when you get somewhere that I must sort out? Yeah, you know, like say, is it meeting people or is it working out where you're going to stay? What's the first thing that you have to sort out when you're moving somewhere? Somebody who's obviously done it a few times.
Yeah, there's so much stuff. I mean, definitely from an immigration perspective, you have to get that sorted straight away. But then, yeah, figuring out where you're going to live. And of course, you can figure out a place for a month or two before you move there. But then really getting the apartment and getting all the paperwork, and you might have to open a bank account. And, you know, navigating all of those processes definitely take time. And I think as far as making friends, it's really important for me. Like I mentioned, that's how I even approached it coming straight from Japan. But I also know that it takes a long time. And I believe one of your other guests mentioned this as well, but I really say it takes 1 year. It takes 1 year to get settled. And yeah. I think that the key difference is, like, you can make these friends at meetup events or whatever you like to do, but are they your close, true, real friends? And not just somebody to grab a beer with. And so what I recommend, just because it's worked for me, is if I meet somebody that I like in those environments, of course I exchange contact information, but also I try to meet up with them shortly after, within the next week or two, separately, or maybe a couple people from the event. But the key is to get it outside of being just a meetup friend that you happen to see at all the events, and rather a real friendship, and see that if there's sort of a mutual chemistry and compatibility. And those friendships just take a long time to build. So now that I've been here just over a year, I feel like I've got that core set of friends, even in this difficult situation, that I communicate with regularly. We meet up as we can, but of course that's difficult. So maybe we have a video call or things like that. But I really think you have to take it. You have to really put in energy and time. And I think a lot of people would think, oh, I've been here for 3 months, I should have everything sorted by now. Why am I so lonely or disappointed or feel like I'm not making progress? And the reality is, and I still have to remind myself, but the reality is it takes time, and especially these deep connections and friendships. So I've definitely had long bouts of loneliness and, you know, challenges really building those friendships in sort of each place that I've moved. And I have to keep reminding myself, and it's definitely better now being with a spouse to, you know, have a little bit of the burden to share and somebody to fall back on. But I would just say that to your listeners, as far as setting their expectations, that it's a long process. It's difficult, and don't give in, you know, don't give up, and just keep trying to build those friendships. But, you know, also invest in the people that make you feel good and that you want to be around, as opposed to, I had always originally just wanted to be friends with everybody and just wanted to be like everybody's best bud. And I began to realize that that is not only impossible, but it's also not very enjoyable. And I've really made an effort to try to invest in the relationships that I feel, you know, are best reciprocated and aligned with my values and my energy. And so, yeah, it takes time for people to figure that out. But the first people that you meet when you move are probably not going to be your best friends for the rest of your life. I mean, it's possible that they are, but you shouldn't go in expecting, hey, I met this nice guy at this one event, we had a beer together, along with 30 other people, you know, this is going to be my best friend for the rest of my life. It's more like, okay, feel it out, talk to them, engage with them one-on-one. And if it's working out, great. If not, then don't feel bad about going back to the pool as well.
Like on a tight time schedule, but I did want to ask about like logistically, because obviously people who are listening to this are going to hear, like, you've lived in Japan and you lived in Germany and Portugal, and they're going to wonder, well, how exactly did he do that? Well, obviously, you know, you've got the opportunities through work, but when it comes to like visas and whatnot, mm-hmm. like how easy is it to, you know, get a work visa to Japan? You can, you know, as you mentioned, teach English. But if you want to mm-hmm. do a different route, and, you know, how easy is it to get a visa for Germany? How easy is it to get a visa for Portugal?
Sure. I think, every country obviously has different systems, different way of doing things, different set of expectations and paperwork, and even within the EU. So that's been a challenge as well. I had an EU blue card, which is a great thing to have when you're in Europe. The idea is that you can add your years of living in different countries that are EU, let's say, like participants in the EU blue card program, towards your 5 years required to get permanent residence. And in fact, in Germany, if you have the EU blue card, you could get permanent residence as soon as like 2 or 3 years in, I mean, depending on some different requirements. So it's a really great program. And so I had that card in Germany. I had 3 years on that card. Mm-hmm. And then we decided to move. And now here in Portugal, I found out that it's very difficult to get the blue card, even though Portugal, you know, my idea was all I need is 2 more years and then I can get my permanent residence. So I actually, based on all the factors and my wife's situation and just everything, I decided to get rid of the EU blue card and just go on a, sort of a normal work visa and really start the count over again for 5 years. So that was a difficult decision, but you just have to evaluate each country kind of independently. That being said, indeed, I did move with job offers. So that was just kind of company sponsoring me. And There are different types of visas, though. I mean, of course, you could have a study visa. There are opportunities to do sort of a passive income visa, like the D7 visa here in Portugal. So a lot of people come over on that, and maybe they have retirement funds, or they're working abroad, and there's some nice tax opportunities, reduction opportunities here in Portugal as well. There's a great freelancer visa that I know a lot of people got in Germany. So there's, you know, plenty and plenty of options. And I think it's a matter of digging into the specifics, of course, related to your situation, your interests, your background, and what you want to do, and seeing if you can make it work for you. Of course, I do a visa planning service through Expat Empire to help people kind of think through that and think of it in terms of a bigger picture, because you could also look at your ancestry, for example. There are countries that, you know, if you meet certain requirements of your parents, grandparents, or even great-grandparents are coming from that country, then you have a potential to be able to get citizenship there as well.
Yeah, I've had a friend do that as far as Germany goes. She's now has German citizenship because of her grandfather. And right. I was actually going to bring up Expat Empire because I wanted to get into how what it is that you do with Expat Empire. And, you know, it says moving abroad consulting and, you know, but what is that and how will that help people when it comes to moving abroad?
Yeah.
And where does it cover as well?
Sure. So because my experience is so broad, I never really felt that I was tied to any one country. And as you can see, I've tried to move around quite a bit. Even with my intense interest in Japan, I wasn't sure that was where I would end up. And of course, we've seen how things have turned out. So the idea behind Expat Empire is to be able to help anyone to move anywhere. Of course, there are times where maybe that doesn't work or this or that. But I really try to, with my team, to bring that kind of about in terms of looking at the individual situation, the specifics, and seeing how we can help them to get to their destination, wherever that might be. So we have a number of services that we typically offer, although, of course, we look at the individual specifics of each client that we talk to. And those services are a moving abroad best practices call. So in 1 hour, talk through kind of any of their questions, talk through the best practices as far as moving abroad, what they need to prepare before, during, and after the move. Then there's also the visa planning service to look at this kind of overall view of what people might be able to do to get a visa in the country that they want to move to. If they're not sure where they want to move yet, or they're thinking between a few countries, or maybe just want some recommendations based on their situation, there's also destination country comparison service to really compare a couple of different country options and help them pick the best one. Then there's a timeline planning service. It's a checklist of all the things that you need to do before, during, and after your move to make sure that you do everything and you don't leave something or forget something that ends up being quite costly or painful emotionally or mentally after your move. And also international job search, so helping people to get jobs abroad. And I've also started a new service called Start Working Online, which is helping people to build online businesses, because I really think there's, you know, this drive to work remotely, to work from anywhere now. And I can see that as things clear up in this current situation, that's going to be
that's the future, really.
Yeah, exactly. So it's all of those different areas. But naturally, just helping people to think through them, figuring out what's best, doing the research, talking through it, sharing my experiences and knowledge, as well as the network that I've built over the years. Mm-hmm. And they can, if they're interested, they can check out expatempire.com. They can download a free top 10 tips for moving abroad ebook, but also schedule a free 30-minute consulting call so that we can talk through their situation, answer some questions, and see how we can best help them to take that next step abroad.
Right. So, You mentioned the meetups. So if someone is, they contact you and they go through those different steps, you know, with the timeline planning and so forth and so on, what's the meetup component? Like, is that something that's specific to certain locations, or is this something that you're doing kind of worldwide?
Yeah, so right now it's just started kind of piloted here in Porto, and it's gone really well. It's grown quite quickly, and it's great to see a turnout of new faces and old faces quite a few times, even though I think we've only had 5 events so far with this situation. Things were doing all right in the summer and not so good now. But Yeah, we're starting that here. But as far as what else, you know, we offer through Expat Empire is indeed the Expat Empire podcast, which was mentioned at the top of the show, as well as I wrote a book. This is the very first thing that I did, was writing a book about my time in Japan. So Passport to Working in Japan is the name of the book. And it's helping anyone think through how they might be able to move to Japan, to live there, learn the language, learn the culture, of course, find a job if that's what they need to do. So that book as well, there's some blog posts and things like that. So just different content that we provide for free. And then if they're interested in discussing with us, you know, through their next steps, then happy to have those conversations as well.
Cool.
Right, and I know you've got to go, so I'll just a great quick one. You just reminded me there saying that you're in Porto. So you've moved to a few countries where football or soccer, as you guys would call it, is probably the prime sport. So has that, any of that rubbed off on you? And if so, have you picked up any teams on your travels?
I would love to say yes, but if I'm honest, I would have to say no. And I think the reason, I've just never been much of a sports following person. In fact, the only sport that I've ever followed, and I do follow it still quite passionately, is UFC and MMA and that kind of thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I don't practice it myself, but just as a fan, I really enjoy that. So I picked that up in my job in investment banking when I started my career. Some of my colleagues were into it, but I was just never able to pick up, you know, American football or, you know, European or I guess NBA worldwide football. NBA,
I didn't think you'd be able to get away from it.
I know. I mean,
especially
a lot of
since you lived in Alabama.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I tried so many times, and I guess at the end of the day, maybe this is one of the reasons that such careers in banking and so on, where people were talking about this all day, wasn't necessarily the best fit for me long term. But yeah, I tried, and it just never clicked for me. So I don't know. Fair. Stick with what you like, I guess. But the funny thing was, seeing how, you know, passionate people are about it. And of course, whenever the World Cup's on, and I definitely in Germany went to the beer gardens with friends many times to, you know, enjoy watching the match. Yeah. And I mean, I pick up a little bit here and there, but yeah, not enough to probably keep the conversation going on it for too long.
Well, I have one last question. And I just want to know, is there anything that you actually miss about the States? Like, you've been abroad for quite some time, and like, I'm assuming that you do go home to visit when you can, but is there anything that you miss, whether it's like physical things, like, you know, certain foods or, you know, family and friends, or just like, you know, actually being there and like the US American culture?
There are some things. I mean, I would also say at the end of the day that my goal is to stay abroad for as long as I can, at least at this point. You never know what the future holds. So like, we'll see. But I really identify with being in different places and kind of being, having that adventurous spirit. But as far as looking at the US and what I miss, of course, I mean, the food is the easy one to answer.
Definitely. I say that too.
miss the food a lot. But I think it's one of those things where it's good to go back for a week or two once a year if you can, and of course see family, if friends, if possible, but really load up on the food, and then I'm kind of good for a while. And I've managed to find ways to restaurants or foreign food shops, even here in Porto, that sell something that will like kind of scratch the itch until I'm able to get back. So I think I miss that and family and friends. But
how
I still am able
feel?
To.
Oh,
yeah,
sorry.
I'm still able, no. I was just gonna say, like, I still am able to keep in touch with people pretty well. And actually, I'd say, of course, my family, I think on some level would like, you know, for us to come and live there, but also recognizes how important this lifestyle and this, you know, how happy that this situation makes us. So they're very supportive. And actually, my mom and dad spent a year and a half living in New Zealand. My dad was working for Weta Studios. And so they've had some international experiences living and also traveling a lot. So, and my sister, actually, she lived for 2 years in France. So we've kind of had some kind of international, relatively international family for an American family.
Yeah, it's in the family for sure.
Yeah, so we were talking about that recently. Like, where did it all kind of come from? How did this happen? But I think, you know, it just somehow rubbed off on my sister and me. And so they totally understand that. And yeah, like I said, we'll see what the future holds. But I think I'm able to kind of manage well enough with a trip every year to be able to stave off too much of the longing. And it's more maybe be great to see family, I think, more than anything else. But if I can get in some Texas barbecue or something, that's hard because I don't really go back to Texas. But if I can do that, then that would be ideal.
Texas barbecue. I do understand. I'm from North Carolina, so I would be a bit more partial to Carolina barbecue, I do know Texas barbecue is good.
I worked for the first 2 years in that banking job before I moved to San Francisco in Charlotte, North Carolina. And actually, my sister's living there now. So, I'm very familiar with the different styles of barbecue. And they certainly both have their pros. But I've always been, I guess, with 4 years in Austin, Texas, more of a Texas fan.
I mean, it's where you grew up. And I mean, like, I've been to Austin and I actually think it's a really cool city. And, you know, the barbecue is, and surprisingly, the tacos are really good there as well.
Oh, man, but... I know.
Don't worry, Tom. And, you'll eventually be able to experience it.
I know. Yeah. I thought I was good.
Yeah.
And you just brought it back up.
Yeah. Well, if I've got to suffer, then someone else has too as well. Because I've been
that's fair.
I've been waiting to go to the States and eat all the food. And, you know, now I haven't been in since November 2018. So I'm like itching to get to the States and eat food. Obviously, NC family.
Yes, obviously.
I want you to say, it's really good that you have, you know, a supportive family, because I think that is one thing that stops people from moving abroad. It's just, you know, worrying about your family and, you know, what you're going to miss out on and, you know, just being uncomfortable with, you know, not seeing your mom and your dad and siblings every day and, you know, being able to go fly to, you know, this wedding and the family reunion and whatnot.
Yeah.
So when your family is very supportive of, you know, your experiences abroad, it does make that transition a lot easier.
Yeah. And they're excited to come visit here in Portugal. So my dad visited me when I was in Japan, and then my whole family came out to Berlin June of 2019, when we had our kind of wedding party type thing, get together in Berlin. And then, yeah, whenever they can make it over here, they're super excited to visit Portugal. And I think partially because they're maybe considering being somewhere in Portugal, hopefully not down the street, but a little bit of distance for some of their retirement. So we'll see what happens. But of course, that would be great, because that would be the best of both worlds, I think. Just be able to have family, but it be, you know, in a place that I really love to be longer term.
Well, that's hopefully going to work out for you. And I just think it's really good that, you know, your family is like a traveling international family and they come to visit, because not everyone gets that kind of experience when they move abroad.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking personally. So I think you're very lucky in that regard.
Yeah, it's true.
Tom, did you have anything else that you wanted to?
No, that's it. No, I think I've held David long enough. I know you got another meeting to get on to, David. But yeah, it's been great listening to that, and hopefully a few people hit you up on Expat Empire for some consulting, and maybe go from there.
So awesome. Is there anything else that you want to plug, David, like any social media, or is it strictly just find you at expatempire.com? Yeah,
expatempire.com is the best place to look, but we're definitely on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, YouTube, Medium, so most other YouTube places as well.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, we mostly just, at least for now, to put up kind of the podcast, but hopefully doing some videos sometime this year, but need to figure that part out first. So feel free to check us out there. Most of them are at Expat Empire, and would love to connect with anyone that wants to chat.
Well, hopefully you do get some people hitting you up. But we'll wrap up this episode 14 of Expat State of Mind podcast. If you like what you hear, you know, feel free to send us an email. Actually, Hold that thought. David, how did you actually find our podcast? I meant to ask that in the very beginning.
Just looking around, ultimately for some, just opportunities to discuss my experiences. So just, key themes, let's say, expat.
So I always wonder how people do get to us. I mean, I know we've got listeners who know us personally, but then I see lots of our listeners are all around the world. And I'm like, how did this person in Slovenia find our podcast? But good to know.
It's always great when that happens. And then you think, you realize your potential, your impact. Let's not even say potential impact, but your impact.
Yeah.
And that's one thing that's really great about podcasting, definitely.
Exactly. But yeah, like I said, if you like what you hear, give us a rating. I think you can rate us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can send us an email at expatstateofmind@gmail.com. Follow us on Instagram, Expat State of Mind. We're also on Facebook at Expat State of Mind. And we're always looking to get new people onto the podcast. So feel free to reach out like David did, and we'll try to get back to you. This has been episode 14. This is Tip.
This is Tom.
And we will talk to you later.
Thanks for listening to Expat State of Mind. And don't forget, if you enjoyed the show, please like, comment, and subscribe. And until next time, look after yourselves.